Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
So, for those of you who are not aware of what happened, and I don't think that's going to be many of you, Israel bombed the Iranian consulate in Damascus, on the 1st of April, one of a series of attacks, which killed senior military personnel. Under international law, this constitutes an attack on Iranian territory. That attack was designed to start further trouble and has not been condemned by the US, the UK, or the UN Security Council thus far. The Iranian leadership has been reported to have expressed the view that if it had been, they would have felt no need to retaliate. Iran has aimed at military facilities, such as those that launched the attacks that they are relating to, with their heavy bombardment attack, whatever you want to call it, retaliation would be the right word, on Saturday night just gone. They did not hit a single hospital. They did not aim at a populated city like Tel Aviv. They have not incessantly bombed civilian areas, as Israel have done many times before and relentlessly since October the 7th of last year. Iran has retaliated for an attack against them that killed Iranian citizens, regardless of whether we like that country and how it is run, or specifically, I mean, it's how the country is run that I think we all have problems with. We don't dislike a country. It's ridiculous to dislike a landmass. But nevertheless, Iran is another part of the world that's full of everyday people, citizens, innocent folks, and as the same as any other country on the earth. So they gave Israel and their allies, funders that is, around 5 hours notice before they launched a set of drones and a set of missiles. Their attack has, the best that I can work out so far, killed no one. And they've been very specific in saying that this is retribution for Israel's murderous attack against them, or one of them. But as far as Iran is concerned, this is over unless Israel wants to continue it. So what you've really had here is a display of willingness, a display of equipment, if you like. You know, this is what we've got, and we've got plenty more of that. During this time, the Israeli government hid in an underground bunker. I wonder who built that. And Israeli air defences were taken up with this display from Iran, which meant that they had to take a break from bombing Gaza for a night, which was pretty nice for the citizens of Gaza. Iran has also achieved the fact of showing how vulnerable Israel actually is and how they needed to scramble outside forces to help them, even with their magic air shield. Not quite as big, tough, and well-protected as they would like us all to think they are. So, for the people out there saying, do you still think we should not sell arms to Israel? I say yes, and we should cease immediately, because none of this would be happening if Israel has not started it. We should stop selling or even providing for free the methods that they use to murder Palestinians. Very simple argument, not one that I have a great deal of moral questioning about. Iran has been very specific in saying that if another attack comes, they would consider using much harder weaponry. I heard hypersonic missiles mentioned. I don't know a lot about what those are. I'm not a weapons bloke, okay? I'm not, so, you know, but hypersonic and missile sound like two words going together that I'm not really going to enjoy the outcome of what happens when you press the button for one. And they consider US air bases as legitimate targets too. So what we are seeing is the potential regional war pulling in each side and their allies, all because of the racist, demented state of Israel. Now, I will not hear any crying of victimhood from Israel, ever. But they started this, they want this, and now they have the most minor taste of the same thing coming back at them. A country that thinks that they can murder with impunity from sending their agents into other countries to carry out assassinations, as Mossad did for decades, to bombing whoever they like with British munitions and American funding and protection. Israel does not give a damn about international law, nor basic humanity, but for some reason everyone else is supposed to. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu wants this conflict. That's why he started it. There are two main reasons motivating him at this time. Motivating him to start a war with Iran, which he has wanted to do for years, basically. He believes it will pull the Americans into a regional conflict that will give Israel the chance of finishing the job of ethnically cleansing Palestine, among other things. They can't really do this otherwise. He wants a war that's going to pull the Americans in, it's going to commit the Americans and going to commit all of their allies, which includes this country. And while he's doing that and everyone's involved in that and everyone's doing those breathless, excited news reports about, you know, an impending war, he can carry on with his settler cronies and his, you know, his armed forces of destroying Palestinian people in the West Bank and Gaza. That's what he really wants. The other factor motivating his insane actions is that when the onslaught ends without stopping Hamas or destroying the brave people of Gaza, nor at this rate getting the hostages back, his political career is over. And with the amount of criminal charges pending against him for all of his corruption, he could be looking at a jail cell for some time. So we are dealing with someone who is so psychotic he will murder countless people for the crime of being Palestinian, while also giving no protection to his own precious country folk in the process, all to basically cover his own arse. A true lunatic that the political class and media of this country, among other places, demands that you support wholly. And if you do not, your career will be ruined. You will be labelled as anti-Semitic for any kind of reaction to Israel or any kind of completely legitimate anti-Zionism, which is a political view and a political view that I share. Anti-Semitism, meanwhile, is a very, very serious issue in society. But sadly, the supporters of Israel have turned it into a near meaningless term by their incessant wolf crying over and over again. And this is of great concern to anyone who is dedicated to fighting racism in all of its forms. You do not cheapen any form of racism and use it as a meaningless slur, because that affects real people's lives. We all know Israel cannot survive without America. They are propped up and funded to the tune of billions of US taxpayers' money. Specifically, they fund the country with arms. For instance, between 2019 and 2023, the US accounted for around 69% of Israel's arms imports, with a 10-year deal signed in 2016, supplying Israel with $3.8 billion of US military aid annually. Since October the 7th, of last year, US arms deals have exceeded $23 billion, with over 100 undisclosed military sales to Israel approved since. While Germany has become the second largest arms exporter to Israel, in 2023, Germany licensed 326.5 million euros in munitions, while shutting down free speech at home, shutting down events that support Palestine and trying to prevent rallies. They even shut down a live stream event last week that was attended. Probably most well-known attendee was Yanis Varoufakis, who then basically repeated his speech and put it on YouTube. I suggest it's worth going to look up. UK firms like BAE Systems continue to supply military components for Israeli fighter jets, including F-35s. Online postings by the Israeli army show F-35s in the bombing of targets in Gaza. So the UK is complicit in this mass murder. And this is why we see protests and shutting down of weapons factories here in this country, and long may it continue. All arms manufacturers, in the meantime, have reported record profits. So every day, you know, working class people die and arms companies score massive profits. Do not fall for the workers' argument over this particular industry. The whole industry is an abomination and it should be shut down. All of this coincides with the decades-long US defunding under both Republican and Democrat presidential administrations of humanitarian aid for the Palestinians. Palestine is the only aid recipient in West Asia that has seen its annual aid flows fall. They would have fallen even further if it wasn't for increased contributions from some countries, most notably Qatar, which reported more than $1.3 billion in aid for the West Bank and Gaza between 2019 and 2022. Just that alone. From 2013 to 2022, the US cut its bilateral aid flows to Gaza and the West Bank by over 90%. US allies have followed suit with a 74% cut in aid from the UK and a 30% cut from Canada. During the time period mentioned, 80% of Gaza's population were dependent on international aid. According to the UN, most of Gaza's water was undrinkable and slowly poisoning people. Both quotes from the UN. And that is according to rights groups on the ground. Those quotes are from rights groups, not the UN, I apologise. But yes, undrinkable water that is slowly poisoning people. Since the 7th of October last year, we have seen a trend that Progressive International describes as arms in and aid out, and the results are brutal. We are seeing starvation on the ground in Gaza right now, all within a time of the world's highest court ruling that Israel could plausibly be committing genocide. The defunding of UNRWA, as it's known, by many countries, including this one, is, in my opinion, a human rights violation and a crime. The Israeli press is now even saying that the war is lost. Again, it's always interesting to look at the Israeli press. They say things that the international press aren't allowed to. They say them very openly, a bit like Israeli politicians. If they want to say what they really think, they'll do a speech in Hebrew. If they want to say something that appeals to the international community, they'll do it in English. But anyway, yes, the Israeli press is saying that the war is completely lost. They can't get rid of Hamas, and they never will. Certainly not while Israel's brutality continues to justify the existence of Hamas. One group of Israelis I do agree with right now, it's the first time for everything, I suppose, are the ones outside the Knesset demanding that Benjamin Netanyahu go. They recognise that his actions will not get any hostages back, or even in some cases that his behaviour is immoral. And as in a country as right-wing and violent as Israel, they are taking some great personal risk in doing this. I admire them for doing so.
Yeah.
Now, when he goes, will this change everything? No, it won't. This is a 76-year occupation by a brutal Jewish supremacist ideology that seeks to wipe out the Palestinian people. So one change of leadership will not end that overnight. But it will end the present state of mass murder Israel is carrying out, and it will let the country know that they cannot do whatever they like with unending international support. It will tell Israel now and going forward that their genocidal madness will not be tolerated. It will tell the world that not every citizen of this rogue country supports their horrendous actions too. In fact, it seems to me that actions-wise, Israel is a very, very right-wing country, but I don't think Benjamin Netanyahu is appealing to anyone at all in his behaviour. I do think that what we have here is a nation that legit can be described as having a national mental illness. So many, from citizens interviewed to government spokespeople, are either overtly fascistic in their desire to wipe out the Palestinians, or they have such disconnection from reality. Journalists like Abby Martin talk to people on the ground in Israel, finding them to be off the scale of right-wing extreme to the point that anyone left-wing there is described as a human form of AIDS. Conversely, she spoke with many Palestinians who just want peace. In her experience, anyway, the ones she spoke to just want peace and no hurt to come to them, nor their Israeli neighbours. They just want an end to this horror. Both types of these folks are never shown by international media, really, for fear perhaps that you might find out what is really going on. Although, you know, take a little trip around YouTube, you'll find some videos containing such folks. Turning to the home front for a moment, God help us, the actions of our political leaders have been an utter disgrace. The present Prime Minister that the public didn't vote for, Rishi Sunak, has supported Israel no matter what, telling Netanyahu before that he hopes, "I hope you win.
Guys, I hope you win."
In a conflict where they have so far slaughtered and starved around 32,000 Palestinians and counting. His cabinet is full of the same kind of racist scum as him, with his ex-Home Secretary now going off to Israel herself for uncertain means, short of just bootlicking and rallying to kill Muslims, because that's the kind of demented extremist that she is. And to think that she held power in this fine land only a few months ago. Also managed to rile up a rally of the far right, which caused the police quite a lot of problems. In fact, caused the police a hell of a lot more problems than any of the Palestine rallies that we've seen in London since October. Meanwhile, last week we saw an interview with Keir Starmer, a true authoritarian middle-class tart, only interested in building his own power with a cabinet, or shadow cabinet at this time, I should say, of the same types of people. He gave the "I would press the nuke button" speech that all British political leaders are required to give to our savage media. They do have quite a bloodlust, those folks. I don't really understand this silly question. I never have. I don't exactly get how you sit on a TV claiming that you're basically such a big man that you would push the button to eradicate a vast number of the world's population. But right now, Iran is retaliating to Israeli aggression, and this is terrible and unacceptable. Don't get it. This position is immature, and it's also lousy strategy. Okay, do you honestly expect us to believe that you do not understand that, Mr. Starmer? This whole idea of you press the button. No, you wouldn't. On one side, you say it's a deterrent. On the other side, you kind of go, oh, yeah, yeah, I pushed the button. And you expect me to think that makes you good leadership. No, it doesn't, actually. It just goes to show what a psychopath you are. Yvette Cooper, why is she still around? Claimed that Iran is trying to destabilize the region. But I'm not sure how she can make that claim hold up. The main target of the Iranian counterattack or reaction was the Israeli base that launched the strike on Iran's consulate in the first place, meaning that under international law, I don't know if you remember that, Yvette, it was a legal act of self-defense. So again, it's probably better if she just say nothing forever. While we're on the subject of Little Englanders, where are they now, by the way? Britain is sending warplanes over to defend Israeli skies from the raining missiles that they've been asking for. Where are the Little Englanders complaining about British resources being used to help a foreign country? The RAF goes over there with our tax money funded warplanes to get involved in a foreign conflict. And no one from the right seems to be complaining about it right now. Why is this a fight that British armed forces need to be involved in any way? I suspect what you see here is the opportunity for the totally irrelevant little country that we live in to become some kind of global player again, taking up its typical role of being bent over and licking the US's boots, as it always has done. Same argument we all heard for Afghanistan and Iraq wars, and they turned out brilliantly. If so, if this is the case, it's about time that you got locked and loaded and went to do your own fighting. I'm so very, very sick of seeing some swishy-haired middle class, often middle-aged or older person sitting in the audience of a television program who may or may not be a plant, talking about how, you know, we should send troops to this place, we should get involved in this fight, you know, ignore the pussy leftists or whatever. Okay, mate, well, you know, get your gear on, get your boots on, away you go. Oh, you're too old? Oh, well, that's convenient, isn't it? Well, maybe you should shut up then. I don't see why kids should go out to fight and die for the sake of your silly little flag. If you're ready to die for an apartheid state thousands of miles away, by the way, away you go. And then just, all right, maybe we'll come back to this actually in a while, Dave. We'll talk about the people who are going over there to fight and the reception they seem to get when they come back. Very, very different from those who've gone to other foreign conflicts. Israel is the guilty party here, and we will no longer put up with their self-made victimhood. They are destabilizing the world, and this cannot be allowed to go on. A horrendous amount of people are going to die while these psychos carry on and have already died, and our own hypocritical leaders support what they're doing. It is not an accident the Catholic Republican folks of Northern Ireland have such great support for the Palestinian people. They did not start it overnight. They've had that support for years. They recognize the same motivations in the Palestinians that they had themselves, the same fight against injustice. Just like them, the Palestinians are not going anywhere. This is their land, and it always will be their land. And it's about time you faced up to those facts, whether you like it or not, whether you believe in it or not. That is completely irrelevant to me. Okay, Palestine will be free from the river to the sea, one way or another. Dave, what do you make of all of that?
Just to put things into perspective. So since the Axis of Evil and the terrible attacks, and this is where a lot of this stems from, or the Middle England or Middle America's view. So 9/11, there's been three presidents, several prime ministers that have, Saddam Hussein, for example, sort of existed throughout those tenures of those people from the West. So you didn't really win there, and you didn't win the Afghanistan conflict, or illegal conflict, should I say. And he had nothing to do with Iraq as well. So that's one. So you bailed out there. You've lost out there. Secondly, a country gave Israel 5 hours notice and attacked the most protected airspace in the world and were able to do it if they wanted to, knowing fully well they'd get, you know, their drones would get intercepted. But they were able to do it. So these people aren't, they're not living in the sand with turbans and things. They're equally, even if more, able to take on the US, Russia, and the UK. And the first point about three presidents and several prime ministers going and Saddam Hussein still here. That message really was for the Gen X generation, who unfortunately have had to be born into this. Gen X and Gen Z are born into this conflict. But when you get a country that can are just really flexing their muscles, this muscle, that tells us this is serious stuff here. And as for Middle England and whoever not complaining about the cost of a war that we shouldn't really be involved in, I've no comment on that really, John, because I'm not being horrible, but they're dying, you know, that generation. And I still say that a lot of this conflict, Israel's right wing views, is the stem of the current European right wing agenda, including the UK, which is extremely right wing. And we just got to get out of it. But and I would also say to the left, come up with a solution. Come up on paper with a solution. Because at the moment, it's just free Palestine. Give me the detail. The devil's in the detail. Because a lot of this is religious as well. And I was brought up into the tenet of never get involved with politics and religion. And this is religious as well. But I still say Israel have a big hand in the economy. And it won't be until, I think, until the Saudis, who are really trying to welcome in Western businesses and Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Oman, make a stand, because it's they're in the region and they're trying to welcome business, and capitalism needs the economy. So there may be a way out here. But I think the UK needs to say what it should say. We did have a geezer that was going to say it, but the right-wing media crushed him. And I think the establishment was scared of him because he was going to say it. He was going to say what it was. But then, you know, the right-wing media got rid of that person. I think that was tactical, personally, because it would have upset people. Certain people that are donating to big political parties here and the US. Capitalism's also got a lot to answer for this as well. John?
Indeed, it has. And, I think you're absolutely correct. It's highly unlikely this would have any support from Britain if we'd taken the right to political decisions back in 2019. Instead, what we've now stuck with is very, not only just the government position, but these very strange media characters who come out and advocate for this mass slaughter as if it's just totally normal.
No, John, I just say, we're too busy protesting on you, Les.
Of course.
We've got a lot of energy there, haven't we, John? There's lots of energy, both people going out.
Burn that energy into being able to drive a shitty car.
You know, we talk about this every week, John, you know, and I look at these people thinking, well, there's millions we're spending on a place we shouldn't be, you know, and you're going out there with these, let's be honest, I know where you're going out there, it's not the policy, it's the bloke, innit, it's the geezer you're going after, you know, the same people that you're advocating bombing, it's because they're Muslim as well, innit, why don't you just come out and say it.
Yeah, but we've got a couple of non-white faces now, like Suella Braverman and Rishi Sunak, who are happy to.
Well,
do
where I grew up, we call them coconuts. Where we're brought up, we call them coconuts, and I'll just say it as it is. Yeah. And more fool you. And by the way, John, someone sent me a letter with an Asian, a Hindi surname, and they weren't from a political party, and they're asking Asians in my area not to vote for Khan because Krupesh, the Labour councillor, and Sadiq Khan again, gave me a rhetoric letter, Modi rhetoric letter, saying that both of them didn't call out the attack on a Leicester Hindu temple by the Muslims. This is the letter I'm getting from an Asian in the Harrow area, and he had no contact address on it. He didn't say he's from a political party. I think he was from a political party. I think he was sponsored by a political party. And I think it's disgusting, because that right-wing stuff is happening in India as we speak. John?
Yes, it is. And, you know, I feel like it's funny, this. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to tread carefully around that one. I always have done. Not because I worry about, upsetting or offending anyone. I worry about people taking my positions out of context, you know, cutting and pasting any of the audio from this. It's not something you ever really should worry about, I suppose. And I mean, to be honest, ask me again next week. I might have a different, you know, feeling on it. Depends what kind of mood I'm in. But, you know, it is funny where you can... All I'll say on this front is, whoever you are in this country, whatever background you're from, et cetera, you can support any kind of international cause when it suits you, can't you? You can support, you know, senseless wars. You can support these senseless NATO proxy wars that we get involved in for some reason. And whether or not aid should be sent here, there or not, you know, it's always a thing with the people, you know, the anti-aid people always have the argument about, you know, using it in this country, but I never see you carrying it out. I never see you as part of the same organisations that I go to or other parts of the country, you know. You're so concerned about the people of this country, you should be advocating for more rights, such as, you know, the right to food campaign. If you remember, we interviewed MP Ian Byrne on this show a while back talking about that, which I was very happy to do. So, yeah, you know, it's you can support something international when it suits you, and I can do the same. So all I'll say to that is, don't complain to me about, whether, you know, going out in the street advocating for a free Palestine or anything else that I do, or advocating against war. There is something within the Indian diaspora community over here. And again, I don't think it's entirely old.
It's subservient, John. They're slaves. They're still slaves. Yeah. Don't act like a slave.
Supporting this nationalist who doesn't... I mean, as best I can tell, I think the press write a lot of inaccurate, you know, troublemaking things about Narendra Modi. I don't like the man. I don't like his positions. I think he's an extremist. I think it would be not inaccurate to say that I think he's a Hindu fascist. But at the same time, you don't help by sort of misreading it. He's somebody else who has benefited from an elite political class in India. Not that I don't think he's a part of that elite, by the way. It's just something you need to understand with the tools that you use to get people into positions of power in this country. Not just this country, but I'd use that as an example. Around the world, it's the same. You can't use the same political system and you can't use the same media and say that you are somehow outside of it. You can't really make that argument. It doesn't stack up. So is anyone from Nigel Farage to Narendra Modi being some kind of political outsider? They're nothing of the kind, and you're a mug if you sign on to that notion. If they were an outsider, they wouldn't have been allowed in. If they were an outsider who genuinely threatened the status quo, as every, you know, political operative should, then you'd see videos of the army doing target practice to a picture of them, as happened to a certain political opponent, opposition leader in this country. But, you know, yeah, he does. The existing order in India has left the gate wide open for him to provide basic necessities for the poorest of people, and then for obviously to reward him with a degree of support. That is completely understandable, regardless of what your views are on this, because it just makes basic sense. And I think that to kind of have that, I mean, again, the structure in India and further out is exactly what you've just called it, Dave. It's exactly that. It hasn't. My point I'm trying to say here is you might not have, you know, white faces thinking they're running India anymore, but the ideology is still there. It's exactly still there. I mean, you and I have talked about this so many times. Maybe we should really get it, you know, a little bit more together, and we should do it as a show at some point. But it's exactly what it is. The same kind of colonialist ideology exists even when you've got rid of the colonialists. It's one of them things. I mean, it makes perfect sense if you look at it. It's a question of changing culture. You mentioned Saddam Hussein earlier on. That was a good example. You know, now there are people born and grown up since 2003 who are, you know, the first generation in Iraq to have grown up, you know, the first generation ever born into a world, not ever born, sorry, in the modern world, born into a world where he is not the leader of that country. theoretically, that's very nice. He was a bit of a bastard, let's put it mildly. But that country is not benefiting in any way from an international occupation coming to their country, overthrowing him, and then basically leaving them all to rot, which is what they've done. And not getting the idea again that people did. Well, yeah, thank you very much for overthrowing that guy. Now fuck off, because we run the country. And if you don't get that message, then we'll make sure you get it. Again, you can't blame them. Would you tolerate foreign armed forces marching up and down the streets of where we are now? Well, actually, yeah, you would, because you lot would tolerate absolutely anything because you're all mouth. Well, but you'd certainly complain about it.
Well, I think they've created...
the Indian mindset is one that... you understand how I feel a little... I do have opinions, and it's not good to pretend I don't, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about it.
No, I'm very comfortable. Absolutely, John, and I would thank you for that, because a lot of our brothers and sisters here of your heritage don't even know what I'm talking about. But me and Pac-Man talk about this because... When opponents to Modi, and these are British Asian journalists, write stuff of what's going on there, their citizenship, Muslim citizenship, they were born there, are being taken away, and him opening up the door with Kashmir, which was a British manoeuvre, by the way, Kashmir. When those journalists are getting verbally abused and are afraid to report, this is just... It's just a tail end to the West, particularly America and the UK, attacking countries, Muslim countries. Just particularly, we don't talk about Libya a lot. Then when it creates pockets of issues, and it would have created power vacuums, then all Muslims are made to look like savages. And, you know, and then it gives the license to start killing Palestinians. And then when we call out Israel, especially if you're a politician, you're made to be an anti-Semite. And at the same time, no one says anything about the Iranian journalist who was attacked a few weeks ago. No one says anything about those two Muslim girls that had acid thrown in their face, you know. And by the way, there was a good note to that. That girl, Cheryl something, or I forgot her name, the Countdown girl, she's been sacked anyway, so that's great.
How is she?
That's what I'm hearing. She's been...
Rachel Riley, that one, that's psycho.
That's it, yeah, I was about to say Teddy Riley. she's got the tin tack. You know, and we can't call out countries because we're, you know, anti-Semite, you know. And I'm telling you something, and I'm not stupid, but if the UK were asked to bomb parts of Africa... or aid Africa, apart from making pop songs at Christmas. But our armed forces were, you know, there'd be uproar. I know there would. There'd be uproar.
There should be.
But, you know, it is what it is. And the trouble is, I'm from a generation born into this hypocrisy. I know what's going on there. We all know what's, you know, my generation know what's going on there, you know. And why it is, and it's in people with power and money, it's in their interest to protect Israel from doing war crimes. It's, you know, it is a war crime what they're doing.
Indeed.
John?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's a war crime, it's inhumane, it is... you know, I know that the legal case has to go through. I'm going to put my cards on the table now, and I think they're performing genocide, which is what they've always wanted to perform. And it is a disgrace. It is a disgrace to the world, if nothing else, for talking about, you know, the generation of that fought fascism, mostly for their own purposes in order to survive. I don't see anything wrong with saying that. I really don't. But, you know, for all of us that constantly lionize that conflict and paint it in the, you know, the most beautiful colours and talk about how we all, you know, people fought a war for this, that, the other. Yeah. People fought a war in Britain. You know, well, first, they didn't fight in Britain. Secondly, the British fought a war, so we didn't have immigrants coming here. No, they didn't, actually. That's exactly what they fought the war against. They fought the war against a kind of political ideology that says this group of people over here are less than we are and they shouldn't come here or go anywhere else that they want. That's, you know, you've really... really got the wrong message. All of those films, all of those documentaries, you've watched over and over again, all of those standing still for 2 minutes and being quiet once a year, and you seem to have got entirely the wrong message from that. It's amazing. So it reminds me of something someone once told me about golf, terrible sport, but it's not a sport, is it? But very good analogy he used, which is the one of practicing bad habits. That I know people who practice a hell of a lot and their golf game never gets better. And I say to them, that's because you're practicing bad habits. But slight digression there. This thing is happening right now. You know, the similar kind of thing is happening right now. And what are you doing? The same thing you would have done always. Absolutely fuck all. You're going down the pub. You're driving your car, moaning about driving your car. Because you know you're getting charged for it, you're just trying to forget that any of these things are taking place or that Britain holds any responsibility for them, not least the ultimate responsibility when it comes to that part of the world. I think I've said everything I need to this evening. I think I've made the point.
I had to call out the RAC from my motor, and I just said, look, the car's great, I had to buy a new one, the same model I bought. I told the RSC guy to change it because it's petrol and new LEDs and that. And he went, no, never mind. At least it is cleaner, which was a refreshing aspect, which seems to have failed everyone, that argument with the air is cleaner in London. So that's a good thing, right? So other than being an ethnic minority or Muslim in the UK, the second worst thing you can be is part of a trade union. Oh, you think I'm joking? It's bloody true, John.
Yes, well, we're going to go out on some better news this evening, which, of course, one of our favourite subjects, trade unionism at Amazon. The Coventry warehouse, site of previous strike action, is facing a union recognition battle as management seeks to prevent it by using union-busting tactics. Shout out to the Progressive International for featuring this story and them basically featuring, well, Polly Smythe, who investigated it for Navarra Media, but it's also been carried by Progressive International. So shout out to you, Polly. By the way, I know this is probably in your interest, but if you ever want an interview to talk about how you got into industrial relations journalism or whatever term you want to give it, you're more than welcome on the show. I think you're a very, very good journalist. I'd love to talk to you. Anyway, the drive to unionise the workforce at Amazon goes on. The Coventry factory that I mentioned, BHX4, is a major site of this battle within this country. Workers are demanding £15 an hour and the right to negotiate with Amazon over their working conditions. It's what we'd call the basics, you and me, Dave. The GMB have submitted an application to the Independent Arbitration Committee, the CAC, for union recognition. So far, so good. If union membership at the site grows over 50%, Amazon will be likely forced to recognise this union. In response, however, the company have increased their anti-union tactics. Thousands of non-union employees have been brought in, causing chaos, not least with the effect that this has had on things like overtime, which basically has eliminated it and this has caused financial hardship for the original employees. This is a kind of classic union-busting tactics we are familiar with from Amazon, but other companies like Starbucks too, of course. The company have distributed leaflets inside the warehouse with large QR codes, which generate an email to the GMB Midlands requesting the cancellation of union membership. Just scan and cancel, I guess. Using language about how you are free to make your decision to join the union. And you've done exactly that, and you've made the right decision by joining the union. And providing a place to cancel membership. Irrelevant to me, folks. QR codes got nothing to do with a good old-fashioned Nokia 6021. Can't beat it. This coincides with the mass hiring campaign to prevent the GMB basically having enough members on site in order to meet that 50% threshold. The site now has 3,500 workers on it, which is a rise from the 1,400 that were present in December of 2022. That's a lot of business, isn't it? Amazon even continued to the mass hiring in January, which is usually post-Xmas time when you see a reduction in orders. Workers who have been interviewed say the plant does not generate enough work for the numbers of staff now employed there. Workstations are increasingly overstaffed and workers report finding it difficult to get on with their jobs because of this. The influx of new employees has also meant bathroom and dining facilities are constantly overwhelmed. One person who I think spoke anonymously to Polly Smythe said, quote, you can walk around for 25 minutes looking for a toilet. end quote, due to it being either occupied or cleaned. And this, of course, has a knock-on effect of when you get back to your workstation, your manager who's sitting there, you know, timing everything you do, goes, where have you been? Well, I had to walk two football fields worth of distance in order to go to the toilet. Amazon being rather fond of monitoring their workforce, of course, is a reason why you're basically having to do this. You end up queuing for the toilet, queuing for food at lunchtime, burning up your break time. So once again, we see workers avoiding using the bathroom facilities because of fear of managers kicking off about it. To try and make, I'm just going to use a direct quote from the Progressive International / Navarra Media article on this, from the article, quote, to try and regulate the number of workers on each shift, Amazon is constantly offering workers voluntary time off, or VTO. Workers are being asked to take VTO, which is unpaid, before their shifts begin via text messages and when they arrive at work. So if it isn't bad enough having time off work that you're not paid for, they're either texting you, going, oh, would you like to take this, or wait until you arrive at work. Well, I've got up and I've come to work. Why would I want the day off? Doing this means Amazon can continue to offer all the employees their contracted hours, of course, while shrinking the workforce and avoiding paying additional wages. It's an old trick, but they still try it. Old dogs trying old tricks. When Polly Smythe interviewed workers for Navarra, they said they felt pressure to take unpaid time off, even though the company proclaimed it optional. GMB have text members to state clearly that they do not have to take this time off if they do not want to. We will repeat that right here, folks. Do not have to take voluntary time off or VTO if you don't wish to. That is protected in law. Dave, you'll back me up on that later on, I'm sure. You can come back in a minute with notes or anything here that needs additions. Okay, another quote from the article. Two current Amazon employees at the site said that workers who refuse to take VTO report being sent to work in other areas of the warehouse, often to do more physically demanding roles. Employees who refuse to move to another area within the warehouse risk being given a disciplinary notice. End of quote. The GMB has also taken action on this by texting members that they can be asked to move to another area of the warehouse, but if, quote, you are trained to work there, that training is up to date and it won't put your health and safety at risk. End of quote. You have a right, folks, to intervene in something in the workplace if you believe it to be a risk to your health. That is the Health and Safety Act. 1994, is that right, Dave?
Health and Safety Act is 1974, the Duty of Care Act, John.
Thank you very much. The downturn in hours also means that staff are having to get other jobs in the gig industry. Now, some of us have not shopped with Amazon for years for a few reasons. There is the obvious ones, like not paying their taxes, treating their workers like this, and also just because I hate huge, uncontrolled companies and know perfectly well that you do not have to shop with them. It's perfectly possible to shop someplace else. It's just my kind of political switching on of 20-plus years ago. You know, we just boycotted the corporations where we could. However, the workforce have not called for a boycott. And for many people, this means that we should not do so until the workforce do that. I'm not going to say that's right or wrong. It's a viewpoint that I understand. I'm not going to say that's... basically, I haven't shopped with Amazon for a long time, so I'm not going to suddenly start doing it now. But if you don't wish to withdraw, well, you know, the workforce has not called for that to happen. So, you know, you're within the moral confines of acceptable behaviour, shall we say, to a degree. What they have communicated, though, through their union leadership is to let the company know what you think. So when you buy stuff, consider writing a review. Remember, in that review, spend less time talking about the item or whatever and just state things like, pay your workers properly, stop forced time off, stop employing people that you don't actually need to employ and causing chaos. Okay, that one needs some work. But you get what I'm saying, right? And also promote all of this via your social media, etc. This is how you work. You know, sometimes people feel like there's nothing, this is disgusting, there's nothing they can do. Actually, you know, all of you have probably got far higher media, social media profiles than I do, any of you listening to this. So that's something you can do. You can promote the work of GMB at unionizing the workforce. You can promote this this article, obviously. You can, we can put it in the show description this week, so you can put it around there, etc. Despite all of this, Amazon workers are still standing together. This is the quote I wanted to read. With union membership looking like it's again at 50%, GMB are pushing again for statutory recognition. Hell yeah. Right, I was going to do a little bit about the to the recent history of this Coventry side, but I'm not going to bother because I think we've kind of put it up there perfectly well. I will say this. Amazon are the worst kind of company that comes into towns promising things that they do not deliver. All around the world they do this. They have taken over parts of the US, for instance, that were destroyed and abandoned by deindustrialization, promising great things for the town, but they never actually deliver that. They just work people to the point where they're incapable of working there anymore. On a roughly speaking, about 3 months it takes to destroy a human body working for Amazon, and then they junk those and get a few more people. The unionization of their workforce could change much of this for the better. So much better. Meanwhile, Amazon warehouse workers in Canada have filed for recognition of their union at two facilities in Vancouver. This means that the US, Canada, UK, and many other countries in Europe are now seeing their workforce unionize. You can hear us knocking, Jeff, and I think we're coming in. Before I hand over to Dave for his comeback on this and other union news, Organize Now have set up an AI bot that you can use in the workplace where you ask questions about union issues with an AI version of Sarah Woolley, who is the leader of the BFAWU, commonly known to us in shorthand as a baker's union. It will never replace having a rep in the room, but if you are training to be such a rep, and let's say you're in the break room and you just need to check something very quickly, this could be very helpful. None of us necessarily like this technology, but technology needs to be used and organized by workers rather than overriding us. So that's the best you can do. If you need a little bit of union info on the fly, you can use that. And yes, in this week's show notes, we will actually include a link to the union bot. I'll have a play with it. So I haven't actually played with it yet. I don't know what it's like. But Organize Now, a great organization. Our comrade and good pal, Jamie Woodcock, is involved with them. He's on the show again a couple of weeks ago. He's a good lad. And he should do, you know, should sit and record more podcasts with me. But other than that, you know, it's a great plug. So what do you think of all this, David? So the Amazon unionization. I mean, look, the fact is, you know, just like Starbucks, it's been a long time coming, but it's clearly happening now, right? Clearly, isn't it?
Firstly, big hello, guys, out to Sarah. I know Sarah, she keeps asking me to have a rest. Okay, so we've taken to, as far as I know, this country has been very emotional and taken to the streets on certain issues. So I'm going to use that take it to the streets analogy. So currently at the moment, if you wish your workplace to have a union, you need to contact ACAS. That has changed now, which you didn't know about. So ACAS used to appoint a certification officer. And you now have to go to the government to get a certificate to be a union. It has to be over 11% of the workforce, and it's for express terms only. Anything outside of that, you have to put that in the application. Express terms meaning sick pay and pay. collectively bargaining. Excuse me. Then when you do eventually get to unionise, so you need to take it to the streets to stop that, which you're not going to do, are you? Then, if you do get a union in the workplace and the employer's not listening to you, not giving you a pay rise, not letting you go to the toilet, not giving you sick pay, and if you want to protest about that, you have to ballot the workforce. When you do ballot the workforce, you have to inform the employer that you're going to ballot. Then you have to get 50% yes vote. Of that 50% yes vote, you need 50% turnout, right? That came in 2016. Take it to the street. And then you have to give 4 weeks notice that you're going to take industrial action. The legislation says that gives you time to negotiate. That's how it was brought in. My view of that is, again, take it to the street. Considering you're taking lots of things to the street at the moment, take that to the street. Before you say, well, union leaders, they get 100,000 a year, and then when its members are out on strike, they still get paid. Incorrect. People who run unions do not get paid either. And secondly, those people are elected, and their wage is elected every 2 to 5 years. It is scrutinized and elected by its members. We currently have a Prime Minister that's not elected. Take it to the street. John?
I couldn't agree more. The street is the place to be. Yeah. It's nice this time of year too. Weather's getting better. So my first demo of the year last Saturday in the sunshine. So yeah, go for it, man. I had to take
it just
my
shows you where our priorities are, John. You know,
exactly.
It shows you what I've just said is outrageous. It's the most draconian trade union law against working class people in the whole of Europe.
Yes, it is.
Right,
and the people who put it in there, including you know Tony Blair, were proud of that. They were proud to say that it was difficult to, for workers.
Well, again, a lot of this stuff, like going to the toilet, is a human rights injustice, and a lot of the human rights stuff about joining a trade union, about being bullied into joining a trade union, about getting ballots on a ballot on a ballot on a ballot, about 4 weeks' notice. The European Court of Human Rights frown upon that. That's why we've left Europe. So what else is next? And are we going to bend over on that? But we're going to protest on a lamppost and attack lampposts. What planet are people on, John?
Exactly. I mean, look, all I would say to the lamppost vandalisers is I'm not actually very good at vandalism. I'd like to become better at it for my own reasons. So if you could give me a few tips and then we can go out and vandalise something useful, like, oh, I don't know, a weapons factory. And maybe we could stop some of this hideous slaughter that we talked about the first half of the show. What I would say on that is I've been thinking about that a bit this week, because you and me had a conversation the other day, which I wish I'd recorded, because it would have gave me a lot of notes. And I've also forgotten it all now. The union thing is amazing to me. Okay, so you get a political leader who comes forward and says, I'm going to make sure there's no more, you know, striking workers in this country. And I think, well, actually, yeah, and to some degree, I agree with you, actually. The best way to do that, however, is to sit down at the table with the workforce and say, what is it you want? And when they tell you that they want basic rights, such as being able to go to the toilet and negotiating better pay, terms and conditions, then provide that for them. And lo and behold, all of the strike ballots disappear because they don't really need them anymore.
Express terms on UK employment law has not got things like going to the toilet. And if we do apply for a certificate to represent our workforce, we've got to put that in. And that's not a just. We have to apply for that in this country. Take it to the street, John.
Part of the world is so just completely dysfunctional that you have to mention using the toilet in a workplace agreement? Well, you know, again, wave your flag and tell me what I'm supposed to be proud of. Absolute madness. Now, on the leaving the European Union thing, I mean, we've jumped around this issue over the years. I don't know. At this stage of the game, we've left. But whatever. I never very strongly for the European Union. I always thought it was another neoliberal institution and a very racist one, etc. There was always plenty of criticism of it. The problem is, what I felt strongly about is how that particular campaign went down. The people that were included as being good enough to speak loudly in the British media and the people who were excluded, who had very good points to make. It was all very, very controlled. Again, by the same political elites who are trying to convince you that one of them is not an elitist or one or other of them is not an elitist. Dave actually has the best position on all of this, the only thing I really talk about, which is to do with the sunset clause. And basically, it was more an act of good luck on the present government getting slaughtered at local elections a year or so back, where however long it was, year and a half, I can't remember, that they decided to drop the legislation to basically suspend pretty much all workers' rights in this country. Legislation that had been put in place via joining the European Union, and is always something I'm still afraid is going to be taken away.
John, it's not going away. It's not going away, and you can't blame Sadiq Khan for that.
You cannot. You're absolutely right. You cannot blame that. Okay, and these are the basics of everyday life. I mean, folks, you know, do you not want a better place to live? Do you not want a better place for your kids or grandkids to live? Do you, you know, a working world that has gone just as utterly kind of dysfunctional and repulsive as the one we have right now across the UK is just, it's not sustainable, it's not acceptable. And why would you want this state of affairs to carry on? I just do not understand. Is it just, all I can see here, And this is why I'm quite, you know, flippant and insulting to people on occasion, this, because all I can see here is you just not wanting to have agreement with people who you seem to be politically different to you. I am vastly politically different to the right wing of this country, but there's plenty of people on the right who see trade unionism as a good thing, who see organised workers as a good thing. People who I would consider to, you know, in the past to have said and advocated some truly horrendous things, like Peter Hitchens. He gets a lot of love from the sections of the left now. I remember him for, you know, relentless.
He's an odd one, John, because
he's a big trade unionist, and he always has been. To be fair, he's legit. He's right when he says he's always held those positions. He's big on trade unionism. He's right too. It's one of the only things he's, you know, ever worth seeing on Question Time is when he batters somebody for lying about the RMT and things like that.
Yeah. I must admit, and I would say this, that I've organised picket lines in the 90s. With people who have a right-wing tendencies. And I must say, they do have bollocks. And they've been fully behind their trade union. But I just think that we've taken that and we've been conned, all the right... I wouldn't say right-wing, but old school have been conned by the media. And I think we're fighting for the wrong things. What I've just read out from the employment law in the UK... These are the things that we should be going to the streets on, John.
Agreed entirely. All of the time. And people say, though, is it hard work? Yes, it is. It's hard work. For whatever my contribution to the political climate of this country has been, it's 20 plus years and counting. And I'm still fighting some of the same fights. And we've had great victories in some of those other fights. And we've had some defeats in others. I don't know what else to say. If you want an easy life, don't talk to me. I don't have one, and I don't imagine I can offer you one. But what I can offer you is the best possible outcome is a possibility if we get together and fight for these things. Basically, we can take the kingdom, and we should, because we built it. You know, it's ours to take. So... Like Dave says,
I will say this to the people who are struggling at work with a bad employer. And it's two words, and it's something that they've never been able to get rid of from the 1700s in the UK. And it's two words. Join a union and get a collective agreement. Collective agreement. Doesn't matter what the law says. Collective agreement. It works. Works every time. If you get together and get a collective agreement, and your trade union will probably have one, so you must join one, and a collective agreement, it is the silver bullet of a decent workplace. John?
Yeah, I mean, that is the true facts of the game here, boys and girls, okay? Forget all of this individualism. It's counterproductive and it's a lie. You want to get, as Gary Stevenson, the guy who does that great kind of page, Gary's Economics on YouTube about economics, said very clearly. You know, you want to, people ask me, you want to get rich, work together. You want to get secure. I'll add to that myself. You want to get secure, work together. You want to get all the best life that we could have, work together. There's no way of doing it individually. And why would you want to? This Thatcherite leftover needs to be junked into the dustbin of history where it belongs. Okay, it's never benefited working class people en masse. All we've had is things taken away from us, more and more taken away from us, more chipped away and destroyed. And a point I was saying, actually, it's just come back to me. I was saying the other day, talking to Dave one on the phone about this, in between, you know, singing Wigfield songs, well, there's only one, isn't there? So I was saying that, you know, so 20-odd years ago when I started all in my political, working life or whatever, well, two things that was very important there. One was I could see how much hard work and effort this was going to be. So remember to have a good time while you do. Don't have a good time at the expense of the politics, but have a good time. So at the same time I was doing that, I was also, you know, going to a lot of gigs and listening to a shitload of music and reading a lot of really good stuff. By the way, a lot of today's reading and sort of publications and certainly podcasts are much, much better than anything that was around at my time. So that's a praise for the modern world there. But I was just saying, you know, one of the things that got me in, I was against sweatshops, as I still am. I didn't see why. I didn't see a position which says that I should be able to buy a T-shirt for £2 made by someone who's, you know, half my age, should be in school and works 18 hours a day in order for me to be able to buy one of these for £2. Now, not only do I think that was a right and just thing at the time, there's also a level of self-interest, because in some cases, literally, in certain parts of the country, but also just figuratively, the sweatshop has come home. Okay, don't push the the frontier. That's it. The, you know, something that should be thought of to all people, both, you know, with the kind of pro-colonialist or even similar, you know, kind of more domestic mindset of like that. The frontier always comes home. Okay, now it's your kids and grandkids and et cetera who are being paid peanuts and can't get a house, riding up and down the road delivering people their breakfast because they can't be bothered to put a bit of toast on a Sunday morning when they wake up, you know, delivering their lunch, delivering their dinner, et cetera, all this kind of stuff. That frontier has come home. You treated people abroad like crap because you thought you were better than them. And now the people who are in charge of all that have said, well, if I can hurt those people and mug them off, I can mug off these idiots over here too. So now they've come home and decided to desecrate our working conditions in this country. Okay. And again, very, very unique. There's plenty of right-wing assholes all over Europe, different countries. But you know what? Even in places like France, they don't touch the workers. You know, that Marine Le Pen is a just, you know, a walking form of human crap. And Emmanuel Macron is no better. They're two sides of the same coin. But they don't fuck with workers' rights very often, do they? Last time Macron did that was a pension age, and look what that got him. Millions of people out in the street. Oh, it didn't work. Is it over? Have they stopped? No, it's not over. They're just taking a break. This is France, okay? Trust me, they're not over with that. And it'll come back on the back of something else too. You know, you build on what you can build on. So, you know, this is it. Just stop this kind of, this kind of relentless self-hating. You know, I said earlier on that Israel is a country that legitimately, you know, we could say has a national mental illness. Stay tuned, because we'll do another show here when I talk about the British mental illness. Actually, let's be honest, it ain't going to be one show, it's going to be multiple. And this is one of them. This self-hating, self-cucking, we are worthless and deserve to be treated this way by our economic superiors or whatever, our class superiors. Junk that shit now. It's never too late. Just get rid of it. For your benefit, for the benefit of your family and loved ones, for the benefit of complete and total strangers who you don't wish any harm to come to. Please, just throw it in the bin. It's probably the best thing we can go out on tonight, I think, Dave.
John, I always start off calm, and then when you tell me about the attacks on unions, I absolutely effing lose the plot.
Well, will it do a similar thing for me? Because like, I always kind of start with like a... you know, you ask me something and I just go, and I think everyone knows when I'm thinking and talking at the same time, because I'm not very quick on these things. So I'm going, I've got to play this over with. Just wonder about that. And then suddenly like 15 minutes into your showtime, we go off to some interesting places, let's be honest. But yeah, you're right. I mean, in the meantime, the ineffective, you know, terrible, you know, the failed politics, you know, of the bearded allotment man, you know, the present leadership of the Labour hates so much and who really scared the living shit out of the establishment. Well, you know what? He's trending again on Twitter at number one. So we live rent-free in your head.
That's what they're scared of. And it's not necessarily the name, isn't it? The establishment, it's the views. I know they put the name up and everyone says the name and, Jeremy, I get that. It's not the name, right? It's the wording of what he would have said and would have done. Would have upset a lot of people. Now, you may say, well, listen, I speak to a lot of my people where I grew up from and I speak to them every day and they'd say the same thing. They said that the establishment would find those views, I'm not saying the name, I'm just saying the views, some people in the establishment, you know, would find it, well, they would do all in their power to make sure those views and those actions wouldn't happen. But anyway, John, listen, Thank you very much for a great show. And we'll catch you next week.